Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. Thanks for joining us on this episode. This is the start of our 9th year of the podcast. And please take some time to tell your friends about the podcast. Remember that you don't need an iPod for the podcast. You can listen to it through any computer or iPad or other tablet like that. This week, we start the year with Bereishit by Neiman Novetzky. Neiman is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Neiman Novetzky.
Thank you, Larry. One of the most well-known stories in Parshat Bereishit is the story of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, or perhaps what we might call the sin in the garden. In chapter 2, we are told that God planted in the garden two trees, Eitz HaChaim, the tree of life, and Eitz HaDa'at, Tov V'ra, and the tree of knowledge of good and evil. God then proceeds to command Adam, Mikol Eitz HaGan Achol Tochel, from all of the trees of the garden you may eat, Ume Eitz HaDa'at, Tov V'ra, but from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, Lo Tochel Mimenu, you may not eat, Ki B'yom Achacha Mimenu Mot Tamut, because the day in which you eat from it, you shall surely die. Chapter 3 then continues with the rest of the story, how the snake convinced Eve to eat from the fruit. She gave from it to her husband, to Adam, and then how all three, the snake, Eve, and Adam, are punished. I want to focus not on the contents of Chapter 3, but on the original prohibition back in Chapter 2. The command makes us question many things. First of all, what is the nature of this tree? What knowledge was gained or was supposed to be prohibited from having? Why did God not want Adam and Eve to have this knowledge? What wrong is there in gaining knowledge? We tend to think of having knowledge as being a positive thing. Why would God tell them that they can't have it? And this, I think, relates to one of the largest questions. What does this prohibition tell us about what the original plan for man would have been? Because apparently, whatever the original plan was, did not include whatever the knowledge of the tree of knowledge entails. We're going to look at a number of different commentators who each try to answer these questions in very different ways. We'll start with the approach of the Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra tells us, Hanachon be'inai, what I think is that there were two trees in the garden. He explains what he thinks is the nature of the tree of life, and then he focuses on the tree of knowledge. Ha'achad eitz hada'at, one of the two trees is the tree of knowledge, v'hu yolid ta'avat ha'mishagel. He says, and it bears the desire for sex, for having relations. Va'alkein kisu ha'adam v'ishto ervatam. And that's why right after they eat from the tree, Adam and his wife cover their nakedness. V'kasher achal adam eitz hada'at, and once he eats from it, yada'at ishto, he has relations with his wife. Ibn Ezra here suggests that when we say that the tree of knowledge contained knowledge of good and evil, that knowledge is not general intellectual facts. That knowledge is not knowing the difference between good and bad, but rather sexual knowledge. And he suggests that that's what was gained when they ate from this tree. The original plan of man, it would seem then, was that perhaps they might have had relations, but that those relations would never have been accompanied by a sexual desire. He brings several different proofs for his read. One comes from the usage of the word yada in Tanakh as a whole. Though the most common definition of the word, of the root yudalet ayin, is to know, the word also is used very often in a sexual sense. We're told that people are yodea another, which means that they had relations, and then the next verse usually tells us that they bore progeny. So he points out the very first act that we see Adam and Chava doing once they left the garden was Adam yada et Chava ishto, and then Cain and Hevel are born. In addition, he points out if the very first thing that we know happened right after they ate is that they covered their nakedness, he suggests eating brought with it a certain awareness of their nakedness that they probably didn't have beforehand. One might further bring support for Ibn Ezra's read by looking at the punishment of Eve. In general, we often see in Tanakh how punishments fit the crime. And the punishment of Chava includes two aspects. One is that she's going to have pain in childbirth, and the other is that she will be ruled over by her husband who shall desire her. And it's very possible that one can see these punishments as being a midah keneged midah, measure for measure type of punishment relating to the sin. If the sin was that you ate a fruit in order to gain sexual knowledge, well then perhaps you're going to have a punishment where that sexual knowledge brings pain in childbirth, where you're ruled over by your husband. So this is one approach that one can take. There is, I think, some basis for it in the text and the events that happen around the story, but not all are satisfied with this answer. Ramban tells us, Amru ha-mifrashim kaya piryo molid tavata mishagel. He says, there are some commentators like Ibn Ezra who tell us that the fruit gave forth a desire for sex. Ve'einenu nachon etzli. He says, but I disagree. And he points out, why does he disagree? Bavur she'amar v'yitam kelohim yodei tov v'ra. Because later on the verses tell us that when they ate from the fruit of the tree, they became like God, knowing good and evil. And he says, if that verse is telling us that the fruit gave forth a certain type of knowledge that equated you with gods, because God already had this knowledge, well then, if you take Ibn Ezra's approach, you're basically saying that God has a sexual drive. And that, Ramban says, doesn't make any sense. One can't have Ibn Ezra's approach work very well with the idea of, and you became like God, knowing good and evil. You became like God who already had some sexual desires. One, of course, would ask, how would Ibn Ezra, even though he was living before, and how might he respond to Ramban? And one might suggest that perhaps he would read the verse of that you were like gods knowing good and evil, that it relates not so much to the sexual desire aspect, but that the sexual desire brings creation. And God is the creator par excellence, and perhaps that's what was meant, that you become like God, just like God is a creator. If you have sexual desire, you too will become like creators. Another difficulty that one might raise against Ibn Ezra is the language of yodea tov v'ra. Where's the good and evil in Ibn Ezra's knowledge of sexual desire? Ibn Ezra himself seems to be aware of this, and he tries to bring other proof texts that have the language of yodea tov v'ra, not just plain old knowledge, but knowledge of good and evil that do seem, or at least can be read, in relation to sexual desires. Nonetheless, Ramban is not convinced, and so he brings an alternative approach. He says, Hayafe be'enai, ki ha'adam haya ose b'tiv'o, ma she'ro'i la'asot kefi ha'taladot. He says, what was man like before the tree? Before eating of the tree, man used to do whatever was in his nature to do. Kashir yasu ha-shamayim v'chotvam, just like the heavens and all the hosts who are sort of programmed to do whatever they're supposed to do. Po'alei amet, they're workers of truth. V'lo yishanu ha-tafkidam, they don't change from their given tasks. V'ein lahem b'maaseyam ahava u'sina, their deeds are not accompanied neither by love nor by hate. No emotions interfere with whatever they're supposed to do. Sort of robotic, you do whatever you were programmed to do. That's what man used to be like. Upri ha'ilan hazeh, and the fruit of this tree, haya molid haratzon v'hachifetz, shiyifcharu ochlav b'davar o b'hafacho l'tov o l'ra. And what happened once they ate from the tree? Then a desire to choose either one thing or its opposite, good or bad, arose. V'hinei acharei achlo min ha'etz, hayta b'yado ha'bechira. After eating from the tree, man had freedom of choice. Ubertono lahara, o lehetiv, bein lo bein la achirim, vizomi dalo hit mitarachad, vira'al adam biotlo ba yeter vitava. He says, and with freedom of choice comes the ability to either do good or evil, either to himself or others. And in this, on one hand, we become like gods. On the other hand, there's a certain danger because we might choose evil. So Ramban is taking a much more simplistic or straightforward reading of the tree of knowledge and saying it's truly pure knowledge of good and evil. But we don't just mean knowledge, we mean and the ability to choose between good and evil. Basically, what Rabban is saying is that from the tree, eating from it, we gained freedom of choice. On one hand, this read is very appealing. It seems to fit with the language of the name of the tree. On the other hand, it has quite surprising and perhaps very far-reaching ramifications as to what that would mean man was supposed to be like. What was the original plan had he not eaten? Because what comes out of Ramban's words is that had we not eaten from the tree of knowledge, we would not have had freedom of choice. And perhaps God's original plan was not for man to be able to choose and differentiate between good and bad and to make his own decisions about how to act. Abarbanel finds this not just surprising, but impossible. He tells us, what the Rav told us that before sin, man didn't have freedom of choice. He says, that's a foreign concept and totally unacceptable. Because man by nature is a man who chooses. For Abarbanel, the proposition that is suggested by Ramban is totally impossible because for him, the definition of man is someone who has the ability to choose. That's what differentiates man from animal. That's what makes man, man. And to say that God had at one point perhaps envisioned a world in which man would not have had that ability is a foreign concept. He says, "Kamo she'amru chazal, v'hinei tov zeh yeter hatov, ma'od zeh yeter hara." He says, Chazal pick up on the words in creation, and it was very good that man is created with an evil inclination and with a good inclination. That man, from his conception, had the ability to choose good or bad. He points out a further problem with the approach of Ramban. And he says, V'im lo kein, lo haya adam. Right? Had this not been true that man didn't have freedom of choice, he just wouldn't be man. V'lo haya mitzaveh oto ha-kadosh baruch hu, and God would never have commanded him. Ki lo tipol ha-tzava'ah, ela lemi sheyesh lo bechira v'ratzon. Because you can't command someone something unless they have the ability to choose. So what Abarbanel is saying is that the entire story wouldn't make any sense if man didn't have freedom of choice. Because what would be the logic of commanding something to somebody who doesn't have the freedom to either obey or disobey? There would be no reason for God to make the prohibition to begin with because man would have had the ability to listen or not listen, to choose to obey, to choose to disobey. And furthermore, one can ask, but man obviously did choose one way or the other before eating from the tree. God had said, don't eat. He chose not to listen. He seems to have had freedom of choice from beforehand. This leads Abarbanel to a different interpretation of the knowledge. And he tells us, Adam harishon kodem chato, haya yodea hatov v'hara, v'ha'amet v'ha'sheker. Before eating of the tree, man did know good and evil, truth and falsehood. Ki shalem haya b'sichlo ha'iyuni v'ha'masi. Because he was actually perfect in his intellect and in his practical knowledge. Aval hayta yidiyato behem b'achreach sichlit. He says, but he was lacking a different type of knowledge. Man wasn't an ignoramus. He knew the difference between good and bad. He knew what truth was. He knew what falsehood was. But what he didn't have was a certain type of materialistic, utilitarian knowledge. He continues, and I'm going to read from an English translation since his words are quite lengthy. The meaning of the decree and command of all the trees of the garden you may certainly eat was, I do not forbid you the things essential for your bodily sustenance from the trees of the garden and the tree of life. But you may not actually eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, by which is meant the indulgence in and study of worldly things. What is the good that should be pursued and the evil to be avoided? Though you may look upon it and touch it, which is a minimal indulgence, just so much as is absolutely necessary. Abarbanel seems to be suggesting that there are different types of knowledge, some were fine for man to have. Others God had not wanted man to have. And those others include what he calls the knowledge and study of worldly things. Abarbanel here seems to be suggesting that the original plan for man was to be at one with nature and God, and to sort of accept whatever God gave him, but not necessarily to look into materialism and the practical application of that knowledge to make the world his own and to conquer and to subdue it and to have man's hand imprinted in the world, but rather to leave it as it was in its natural state and thus become close to God. He says, you will let it touch the tree of knowledge. There's a certain amount of that practical knowledge that's necessary for life, but to actually indulge in it and for it to become the main aspect of your life, that's what you're totally involved in. That, he says, was a problem. Eating here, he says, implies the sustenance of the body from the food and the indulgence in it, and that the food ingested becomes identical with the body that absorbs it. If you mamash eat from that practical knowledge, that becomes who you are. That becomes your essence. And it's not supposed to be your essence. It's supposed to be a necessary tool maybe to get you where you need to go, but it's not supposed to be what you're all about. From this, only spiritual death can ensue. Preoccupied with the tree of knowledge, you will become divorced from the tree of life, which is synonymous with death. Hearing this from Abarbanel is somewhat surprising, because if anyone knows Abarbanel's life history, he was not someone who was divorced from the practical realities of the world. In fact, he was a finance minister to the king, very, very involved in the secular world around him, very involved in the material world around him, not someone who just communed with nature and was in a spiritual state the whole day. And it's possible that being so involved in that aspect of life made him sort of rebel against it because he saw all the negativity that came along with someone who was so preoccupied just with the material world that he suggested that that must have been the evil that was brought by the tree of knowledge. Nechama Leibowitz, in her writings on this parsha, quotes Abarbanel and questions him. She says, "Va'anu kor'im utmehim." We read and we're surprised. Ha'im zohi hashkafat toratenu? Is what the Abarbanel is expounding, is that the philosophy of our Torah? Al avodah v'amlacha, is that what it really thinks about work and creative abilities and people's involvement in the world that we're not supposed to be involved in the world? Ha'anam shimush ha'adam b'sechlo hu tota'at chat'o b'achlo me'eta. That, he says, is really using our brains, using our knowledge in utilitarian purposes in order to go and change and subdue the world. Is that a sin? She points out, didn't we already read in the beginning of Parshat Bereishit, God's command to man, go fill the land and conquer it. We're supposed to rule over the land. From those words of God, it sounds like his original intention was not for us to just remain at one in nature, just accepting whatever God gave us, but to actually go out into the world, to conquer it, to use our knowledge to improve upon the world, to change the world. And thus, she says, Abarbanel doesn't seem to fit with that original description back in the first chapter of Sefer Bereishit. Kasuto, another commentator, takes a similar approach in the sense of looking at the knowledge as knowledge, but goes in a different direction. He says, "Ein kan havchana b'tim v'ra." He says, we're not talking about here differentiating between good and bad. We're not talking about freedom of choice. He says, no, we're talking about plain old objective knowledge. He says, until we ate from the tree, Adam and Eve were like little kids who don't really know all that much from what stands around them. He says, really, the tree of knowledge is exactly what it says. Knowledge, knowing what's good, what's bad. Beforehand, what was man like? Man was like a little kid, right? He might have some factual knowledge, knowledge of concrete things, right? But not necessarily knowledge of good and bad, of any deeper concepts. He says, "Bishad b'yotzo hayat tamim ki yeled ben yomo." And the hour that he was born, man was like a baby, a newborn baby, totally pure and innocent. And he was happy in the garden. Now, the big question, of course, on Kasuto is, well, what was God thinking? What was his plan for man? Did he really mean for man to live in an ever long state of ignorance, of non-knowledge, of being like a little kid? And Kasuto suggests that how do we understand the prohibition? This is all coming, he says, mitoch ahava ahavhit asar lav Hashem achilat pri. This is coming from a fatherly love that God prohibits the eating of the fruit. Because God knew that as soon as they ate from that fruit and knowledge was opened up to his kids, to Adam and Eve, that would be makor hada'agot v'hamachovim. With knowledge comes a price, comes pain, comes worry. And God was trying to protect his kids, Adam and Chava, just like every parent, to some extent, wants their kids to remain that little kid, the one that doesn't get hurt, that doesn't have to worry, that doesn't get pained, that doesn't have all of the suffering that often comes with knowledge. So Kasuto here is presenting God like a father who on one level wants to his creations to remain in that innocent childlike state and thus tells them, no, that tree is prohibited from you. One still probably would question Kasuto, even though we understand that fatherly love and that desire to protect our children. Most of us parents, though we have that desire, also have a desire for our kids to grow up and recognize that you can't stay in that innocent state forever, that yes, with knowledge comes a price, but that the price is worthwhile, and that we would never want our children to have neither knowledge nor pain, but would probably prefer a little pain in order to get the greater gain of knowledge. And so I want to conclude with one last approach that's quite different than all the ones that we've seen until now. This is an approach that's found in the Midrash, and I'm going to read it in English. Said Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair, before Adam partook of this tree, it was called simply tree, just like all other trees. But as soon as he partook of it, thereby transgressing the decree of the Holy One, blessed be He, it was called the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, alluding to its future destiny. The Midrash is suggesting something that I think is really interesting. Until now, almost all of the commentators, in trying to understand the nature of the tree, the nature of the prohibition, looked at the name of the tree. They said, we'll figure out what this tree is all about, why God is prohibiting eating from it, if we understand what is Eitz Hadaat Tovara. The Midrash suggests that actually that name wasn't the original name of the tree. Originally, it was just referred to as tree. And he says, how do you know that the tree was not so named at the outside? How do we know that it didn't have this name in the very beginning of the story? From Eve's reply to the serpent, see what she replied to him, and from the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, thou mayest not eat of it. She didn't say of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. So the Midrash points out, when Eve is talking about the tree to the snake, she doesn't refer to it by any name. The simplest way would have been to say, the tree of knowledge of good and evil is a tree that we're not allowed to eat from. Instead, she refers to it as the tree that's in the middle of the garden. So the Midrash suggests, look, that proves to us it didn't yet have a name. When does it get its name? Why then was it called the tree of the knowledge of good and evil? Since through partaking of it, Adam became acquainted with misfortune. Before he transgressed the command, neither toil nor trouble, neither cold nor heat nor pain had been ordained, nor had any misfortune hurt him. But as soon as he transgressed the statutory decree of the Omnipotent, he was beset by every kind of trouble and dogged by suffering. So the Midrash suggests the tree of knowledge gets its name after the fact. Once man sins by eating of it, then it is known as the tree of knowledge of good and evil, because through eating from it, man now knows what is evil, in the sense that he's been punished. And for the first time in his life, he knows what suffering is. And only then, of course, can you appreciate the good that you have lost. So the Midrash suggests you can't learn anything about the prohibition from the name. The name has to do with the repercussions of eating from the tree, not from the prohibition. So the Midrash ends Well, then why did the Holy One, blessed be he, ordain that he might eat of all the trees of the garden and withhold from him just one of them? So if so, how are we to understand the prohibition? And the Midrash answers, so that he should continually remember his Creator and be conscious of the yoke of him who fashioned him, and that he might not be overweening. The Midrash suggests that the point of the prohibition wasn't to protect man from something that he should not have. It was not to say that this is my plan for man and I don't want you to change, I don't want you to gain something from eating the tree. Rather, the point of the prohibition is the prohibition itself, meaning God wanted man to constantly remember his Creator. He wanted man to be living in that garden, but to be thinking that there's a God on top of him. And the only way to do that is to give him some type of a command. Tell him something's not allowed. Every time that Adam and Chava would look at that tree, it would make them think of the gods who's on top of him. That's the tree that God said you can't eat from. And so the tree was meant to be a constant reminder of God. So I think this approach goes in a very different direction than the other ones and doesn't focus so much on the knowledge, whatever type, whether it be sexual desire like Ibn Ezra, whether it be the freedom of choice like Ramban, or whether it be material knowledge like Abarbanel, or pure own objective knowledge like Kasuto, but rather the tree was prohibited simply as a reminder to man that God exists. So I hope that gives you much to think about as you explore this story when you read it on Shabbat. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Nema. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.